right. I think with that very long roundup that we've talked about Demon's Souls, we've talked Nintendo, we've talked about just about everything, I think it's time we should talk a little bit about your latest game, Chris. So, first off, The Last Federation, it just came out last week, and as we were talking about before the cast, it has done really well for Arkane, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's been our strongest launch ever, so we're relieved and pleased and excited and working really hard on post-release support and planning an expansion already.
Nice.
So on.
Now, remind me about The Last Federation. Was this the game that sort of came from one of your older ideas, like it sort of evolved? Or was this just an original idea that you started a few months ago?
This one, all of the above, sort of. We started working on a game called Cretaceous in October, shortly before Bionic Dews came out. And that one wasn't quite cutting it. So after a couple of weeks, then we stopped working on that. And we were working on a game called Starport 28, which is kind of a pure simulation game. And that was going okay, but it just wasn't really working out. And then Starbase DF9 got announced, and we're like, oh, yeah. Crap, you know. And so we're like, yeah, okay, that we're done with Starport 28. And so, you know, some of the ideas that had been percolating in Starport 28 got pulled directly into The Last Federation, and some very old ideas that I had been wanting to explore in AI War from a long time ago, from before it was finished, mm-hmm. and also all through the life of AI War, where I was like, I can't do this because of the way that AI War is designed, but I'd love to be able to do this, you know. We came back in and did all those things. And so it was a project that really pulls together a lot of things that I've wanted to do for a really long time,
mm-hmm.
And that I've made kind of swipes at with, you know, there's a little bit of every game we ever made, pretty much, mm-hmm. in this title. And just from a broader design standpoint, you know, where we've been kind of doing this and that, you know, all over the place, and this kind of pulls things together. It's really not something that's immediately obvious to probably anybody but me, but it's something that I wrote a little blog article thing about it a while ago, and I was pointing out, you know, this is kind of like that, it's kind of like that, you know. And then there was a whole lot of evolution that happened as we developed it too, because the combat was a bear to figure out. And we went through, I think, 5 major iterations, maybe 6. I think it was 5. Where, like, I mean, it started as this 1v1 ship side view thing, and then it shifted to RTS, and then it shifted to RTS but with one ship, and then it shifted to kind of a shmup, and then it shifted to a turn-based shmup, basically, which is where it fixed at. And it's really cool. There's been a through line all the way through it of this is what we want combat to accomplish and things that we carried forward and, you know, ideas through each thing. You know, there's still bits of the RTS side of things in there, and there's, you know, obviously bits of the shmup that got pulled into the turn-based combat and so forth, and, you know, so on and so forth. But it's a title that was both scratching at a lot of old itches as well as being highly speculative, and it took a lot longer to create than I had anticipated or budgeted for, so that created some difficulties for us during the time, but it was really worth it. It's possibly the project that I'm, you know, most proud of at this point, and given the reception and so forth that it's getting, it's I think, knock on wood, I think it's probably our new flagship title. Not that we're going to stop making AI War stuff, but this is, you know, this is what I want to be kind of the thing that we come back to, you know, heavily, you know, at least a couple of times a year for another 5 years or something, like what we've done with AI War. So,
yep, and congratulations on the sales as well for it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep, and I definitely want to talk more about the combat systems and about the future of The Last Federation in a few minutes. But before we get there, for the people who haven't heard of The Last Federation, I know we talked about this a little bit when you were last here. could you give us like sort of like the elevator pitch, or you know, like the 10-second pitch for what The Last Federation is?
Sure. Yeah, you're basically Batman in space, but you're like a Hydra. So there's this Federation, or sorry, there's these 8 planets in solar system, and your race has been oppressing them. They have managed to wipe out your race. You're the last one. They're all becoming spacefaring. They're all kind of warlike with each other. And it's kind of a grand strategy 4X thing. But you play not as one of the major powers. You're basically, like I said, kind of Batman in space. And, you know, Batman comes in with, like, superior technology and, like, beats the crap out of everybody. But at the same time, he's not going to, like, beat an army either, you know. And so you come in and there's a lot of political wheeling and dealing and grand strategic sort of stuff, 4X type of stuff, and then tactical turn-based combat where you go in, you know, you by your lonesome self versus, like, fleets and stuff, and they outnumber you, but you've got, like, special abilities and some other special weapons and stuff. And it's really unusual. It's a deeply simulated game, so it's basically a 4X grand strategy game set inside a simulation game that you don't play but that affects the world that you're in, that also has a tactics game underneath that.
And I'm glad that you explained all that, not me, because I will have horribly butchered all that. It's interesting that you mentioned that the game you consider a grand strategy or 4X style, as that was my next question. Because as you said, it's very interesting that you're making these strategic decisions, but at the same time, you're not essentially a part of those decisions, or you're not a nation. You're not going to be affected by, directly anyway, affected by, you know, one planet's economy failing, or another planet, you know, having a plague decimated. But that all still comes back to you and what you're trying to accomplish, which is, of course, trying to create a federation of the remaining species.
Right, and so that's one of those cases where you can kind of, not in a literal sense, but kind of figuratively, you know, adopt a race or a couple of races or whatever. You're like, these guys seem like they have the right mix of friendliness to me, power, friendliness to other people that I can kind of make them work together to start getting going on a federation here. And you kind of adopt them. And, you know, you can kind of help them conquer other races if you're doing so. You got the exterminate thing and the expand thing if you want. And then you've got, you know, the resource management and stuff is all kind of indirect because they have resources. Your main resources are time, not your personal player time, but rather solar map time. There's various things that cause a passage of time. And so, you know, you might say, all right, I want you to colonize the moon, but it's going to take 3 months of solar time. And then, you know, so you take that action and zip, there goes 3 months of time. And it's like, all right, what happened while that was going on? Or you might take a dispatch mission and you can kind of fast forward as much as you want and then slow down. And you're like, ooh, wait, hold on. Worm, do I care? No, let those guys kill each other. Keep fast forwarding, you know. And so, you know, if disease breaks out on, like, you know, a planet that you've adopted, then you're kind of like, well, do I help them? Do I adopt somebody else? You know, how's my strategy change here? So, you know, I think of it kind of as being a weird sort of 4X in that since you aren't a major power, you're kind of trying to form a super government in whatever way you can. And you may have self-set goals. There's a number of achievements that are interesting, like get a federation with, you know, just these races or with, like, everybody still alive or something, you know, which is hard to do. That one's called, like, everyone's still here, you know. And so a lot of those traditional 4X activities, you are encouraging provisional allies to do and preventing provisional enemies from doing. And eventually some of your allies turn into full out definite allies. You know, they join the Federation. It's like, we're going to look after you now because, you know, now you're really one of us. And then some of them will form like competing alliances and stuff. And either you can try and kind of tempt them out of it or kill all but one and the thing dissolves that way or whatever. And so they may be considered kind of your permanent enemies at that point, or you can kind of try and broker your way out of it in various fashions. It's difficult, but can be done with most of them. So it's a 4X, but not one that you play a traditional role in, mm-hmm. which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. And one thing that I really want to touch on that I find very great about The Last Federation is how much the lore and the almost the backstory of all these planets fits into the game design. And one of the things that I always think is somewhat underrated with your games, Chris, that a lot of games have very interesting backstories. I think we mentioned this first time you were here with The Valley Without Wind, the whole concept of, you know, reality has shattered, you know, time is completely screwed up on this planet. Love Shire Haven for that type of story. Now, with The Last Federation, what's interesting, as you said, each planet is basically run by its own species. But instead of it being like a traditional 4X game where you basically handle negotiations for each guy pretty much the same exact way, you basically wrote each species not only having their own backstory and government, but how you actually have to wheel and deal with them.
Yeah, they all have their own system of government. Yeah, like, you know, you've got the Acutian capitalists, which are like these, you know, really amoral capitalist robots. And, you know, there are some political deals they'll do that nobody else will, like dumping toxic waste on another planet and so forth. And, you know, they'll, you know, for the right price and stuff, they'll strap rockets to a moon and just obliterate another planet for you. And you've got like the kind of tinfoil hat paranoid guys, the Evox, that also are like always like, you know, sticky fingers, stealing all the technology from everybody else and researching technology like crazy. And, you know, they have a council of elders that you can go and work with. But every time you give them advice, like, you know, do a deal with them, which often constitutes like some sort of advice, even if it's good advice, they get like really resentful for you at it and then like will like charge you more for a while until the resentment dies down. So they're like, and then you've got like these agrarian current communist barn owl guys called the Peltians, and they're like super cuddly and in general weak. Like they just absolutely get just railroaded in ground combat and so forth. But they're like communists and they don't even like take money or anything of that sort. And so you have to get like voting proxies with them for like, you know, people that'll vote for you and things. But that's actually fairly easy to do. And they're kind of a weaker race. And some of the other races will like look down on you for getting them into the Federation. It makes it more difficult to deal with like the kind of Klingon like guys. But you can, you know, much more easily deal with them. And then there's like the goody two shoes robots that are like up in everybody's business. And there's all these different things that they can do. There's actually 12 political parties that they have in their parliament, but only 6 show up in each game. And there's different options that are available to you depending on which 6 are in the game and which party is ruling at the time. And you can make like speeches for or against parties to get, you know, parliamentary members to switch. And, you know, there's just all that sort of stuff. And the warlords with the Klingon like guys, the Burless, you know, and you have to bribe, blackmail, and duel them to get them to do anything. They don't take money either. And so that was something that was really fun and something that really was a big focus for me to make the races feel distinct more than just in graphics and name and how they talk or whatever, but literally how you interact with them. And there's all these specific rules on like things that, you know, AI rules on like the different races and stuff too, of like the kind of insect hive mind guys, the Thoraxians, they're queens and so forth. They will actually attack people that they like if there's an opportunity, just because the people are weak enough. And we get players sometimes that are like, the Thoraxians just attack these guys, but they hold them in high regard. And I'm like, yeah, but they were too weak. So they're like, hey, we can take your planet. We like you, but sorry, that planet's ours now. And so that's one thing I need to make more clear in the game is why exactly they attacked. Because people are like, is that a bug? And it's like, no, no, that's just them being Thoraxians. But, you know, you'll notice that the, you know, goody two-shoes never do that. And like the goody two-shoes guys, they won't take other planets. They'll go to war, but they will not capture somebody else's planet. And, you know, there's just various other things like that. You know, like there's other guys that have a sense of honor and you do certain things and they get bent out of shape about that. Or, you know, they'll come to the aid of somebody that's weak just because out of their sense of honor. And, you know, or there's just all these different AI things. And some of them have unique technologies. They'll have unique ultimate weapons, which hardly anybody sees, because if the game goes on that long, then you're in for a rough ride. There's this really interesting late game that almost never happens, but when it does, it's just batshot crazy. That just, like, the stuff that people start, that the races start bringing out, it's just like, oh god, let's end this quick before just the solar system explodes. But it takes, like, you know, 10 plus hours of solar map time to hit that sort of point, but which is not to say 10 hours of real time. But anyway, so that was something that it was a really big focus for.
Yep, and one other interesting aspect of the game, as we mentioned, it is a very unusual gameplay system. And one of the things that the regular game has is that it locks a lot of the systems, a lot of the more advanced mechanics behind the solar map. So when you start out playing, first, you can't see basically the different, like, the economic, medical, and the other features of each planet. And then that unlocks, the tech tree unlocks, and so on. What was the decision to essentially gate a lot of the systems behind time spent or events happening in-game?
That was purely a tutorial thing. Okay. And if you do an advanced start, you can turn that straight off and just jump right in. You know, we have the quick start, which is basically we wanted to have as few for the game options as possible in the quick start. And I think we boiled it down to just difficulty. You know, you select your difficulty and you push OK and that's it. No other options, you know. Mm-hmm. Then there's the advanced start where you can, like, customize all this various stuff. You can turn off the tutorials, you know, all that sort of thing. But, you know, if somebody clicks that the first time they click it, it warns them, you know, if this is your first time, you can do this, but, you know, be warned of what you're in for. Just, you know, if this is your first time, you probably want to do the quick start, you know. And so with AI War, there were about 5-ish hours of tutorials, 5-6 hours of tutorials that you had to do before you could really play your first game of it. And even then, you were still really learning. And that's a big time investment, and I'm, you know, thrilled and amazed, and it's great that so many people have made that sort of time investment with AI War to get past that hump. And I think a big part of that was that the tutorials were really fun and engaging and kind of helping leading you along and so forth. But with the Last Federation, it's so much about kind of like the butterfly effect and like the crazy things that happen and all that. There wasn't really a good way to make a discrete tutorial. Mm-hmm. And I also really didn't want to do that. I mean, I like building this, you know, just let me play, you know, just let me play. And the way that the complexity of the Last Federation is managed is that it's, you know, so many different subsystems and how they all bounce around off each other, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you have, like, the political system for one and the political system for another, and they're these discrete systems. You could take one out and it wouldn't affect the other, but when they're both there, you know, they bounce off each other and, you know, things happen because of the interaction, you know? Mm-hmm. And the whole game is built that sort of way, and so you have all these discrete subsystems bouncing off each other. So it's like, okay, well, what are the subsystems that are most complicated or least necessary for the player to know about early? Let's just turn those off, or in most cases, hide the fact that they're there doing stuff so that the simulation still happens like normal, but not let the player actually see or interact with it, because it's okay. They're not going to get killed in that particular point in time because of managing. They're not going to win either without knowing that stuff, but they're not trying to win just yet. They're just trying to consolidate their starting position and learn how to play. And doing that is not going to put them any further away from winning. In fact, it advances their cause of winning. So not getting distracted by the end game and, you know, trying to worry about that just yet is a good way of letting them focus on kind of the short term and learn that. And then it's like, okay, past a certain point, now you know how to play. You know what to do. Here you go. And that's the point where some people go, oh, wow, I know what I... I know how to do all this stuff. You know, I know how to ride the bike. I know the rules of the road. But wow, there's a lot of streets. Where do I go? You know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's kind of the progression that we tried to build in was, you know, making sure that you would learn how to ride the bike before it's asking you to like plot, you know, mm-hmm. you know, routes on the streets too much and all that sort of thing. And then we try, you know, and give a little bit of a GPS there, basically the computer advisor where it's telling you like, you know, well, these guys are probably the best sort of allies you could have at the moment. Here's your top three likely allies because A, they kind of like you and mm-hmm. B, they're in a good position. And here's the top three most powerful in general. They may or may not overlap with that top list. Mm-hmm. And if they don't overlap with the top list, they may be somebody you want to keep an eye on. Or if they do overlap, then, wow, that really is probably somebody you want to, you know, be friends with. And then it tells you, like, places you're behind in technologies and stuff where it's like, you know, the tech tree is really big and kind of intimidating. And mm-hmm. people can just kind of look in there and go, oh, God, I'm not going to deal with that right now. And that's a fine reaction. But then you go into your computer advisor. And it's like, you know, there's not really any tech that you have to worry about right now. You can deal with that stuff, you know, some other time. You know, on the default difficulty, you don't necessarily have to get too involved in technologies. But then when there's stuff that comes up, which it does before too terribly long, it's like, hey, you need quantum power. These other guys have it. And the fact that you don't is putting you at a disadvantage. Get quantum power. And here's how. And so... So it kind of guides you with that sort of thing too, and gives you kind of these short-term goals. And then, you know, gradually as you've adopted races and doing these other things, you look at all the various options that you have. Mm-hmm. There are well over 200, I think it's approaching 250 different ways of interacting mm-hmm. with the game,
yeah.
like different sort of actions you can take. And so it's one of those things where it's kind of a sandbox, and it's just kind of about experimenting and seeing what you can make happen. But,
yeah, I mean, earlier I was playing, I played enough to unlock the Federation for the first time. I was surprised at all, like, the different, not only options, but the conditions that you could have races join Federation. So, like, one was, you can have them join only if they're friends with this one species and their enemies with this one, or if their economy has suffered to this point, then you can force them to join that way. So, as you said, it feels a lot more sandbox than like a traditional strategy game where you always have an idea what the beginning, the middle, and the end game is going to look like. Here, you can tweak it and, you know, push things in a lot of interesting directions.
And a lot of it's circumstantial, too, mm-hmm. because if somebody's doing really well and their economy is in no risk, you really probably are going to have a hard time pushing them down to scary town levels, which is what it has to get to be where you can kind of force them into the pressure them to get into the Federation through desperation. And so you're kind of looking at this opportunistically and you're just like, yeah, that's not going to happen this time. That's not even, I'm just going to ignore that. That's just not even relevant this mm-hmm. time, you know? But it's like these other guys, they're kind of, you know, a little iffy environmentally on their planets. I bet I could, you know, really force, hey, Acutians, how about we dump some toxic waste on their thing? You know, and it's like, that has consequences. It's like, well, the Acutians are like, yeah, sure, all right. But then everybody else is like, Acutians, what are you doing? You know, and like them less. And they're like, Hydral, I'm like, which is you, you know, they're like, what are you doing? You're dumping all this toxic waste. You know, like, look, guys, it's under control. I'm just trying to poison them enough that they want to join the Federation. It's all cool, you know? And so it's kind of like, okay, you know, or like the Klingon type guys, you can kind of ignore them for a while and build up this really big Federation as long as they don't, like, you know, kill you. And then just amass such huge armadas that you, like, outnumber them 4-1 or something like that, and then pressure them to join out of kind of respect for your military might. And they're the only ones that'll do that, you know. But they have this warrior culture, and they're like, okay, cool, you guys rock. I see that you like things that go boom. We're in. You know. And so that's... one of the challenges that we always have with past the how do I play, you know, that whole thing with the where do I go now that there's all these streets. Well, it really depends, you know. I mean, look at the situation. I mean, you know, the options to do with, you know, the bad economy for the guys that are that's relevant for may or may not be a good idea, depending on the particular game. And, you know, there are 11 different kinds of planets, like, you know, terrestrial or overpolluted, terrestrial, over-industrialized, rather, or, like, the various types of gas giants, or, like, trans-Neptunian planets, or, like, molten or heliosol deserts, or, you know, in by the sun, or transition desert, which are, like, Mars, that sort of thing. Different races have different baseline compatibilities with all of those, and so you may have a race that's normally very strong, but they're on, like, a world that is very inhospitable to them, and so they are just doing terribly this particular game. And so normally, like, the Klingon guys are like, aha, you know, but they're stuck on some little ice dwarf, and they have, like, hardly any room to grow. I mean, it's like a plutoid, you know, there's, like, not much room to begin with, and they are, like, heat-loving as a race. And so, you know, you can try and help them out by, like, building, like, a Soleta array to, like, you know, focus more of the sun's light on the ice dwarf and, you know, get them better compatibility. And you can, you know, help try and get terraforming kits on there as well, but you have to have the cooperation of another race in order to do that, or run these special quests that only come up sometimes, and they have opportunity costs of you can only do one of the two quests that pops up. You know, so it's just, it goes on and on and on with all the different things that can bounce around off of one another. And so it's kind of like, all right, you know, let's pick who I think I want to be buddies with for right now. And the computer advisor tells you that. And it's like, what are their characteristics at the moment? I mean, you know, in general, I know what this race is like, it tells me. And I see their circumstances. How can I make them like me more? And the people that I want to like them also like them more. Out of the options that I have before me, let's give that a shot for a while. And then as things change, maybe I'll change my mind and do something else. And you just kind of keep, you know, chiseling away all the parts that don't look like the happy Federation you're trying to make until you get it. And that's a really neat thing to me, because I always feel like so many strategy games are about conquest or whatever, or they're just about these really kind of arcane political models or whatever. And this is just kind of about life in a lot of respects. I mean, there's stuff going on. There's diseases. There's politics. There's wars. There's, you know, compatibility with the planets. There's entertainment. You know, you can make races like each other better or worse by, like, you know, if they have good, you know, holo video channels that they like or don't like, you know. you know, hey, you know, we like these guys a little better because they have good, you know, porn, basically, with one of them. Or, these guys, look at all the porn they're making. We don't like them, you know. You know, that sort of thing. And so there's just all that sort of stuff going on, and you are just kind of this puppet master behind the scenes, kind of pulling the strings as you see fit and, like, manipulating things so that they kind of progressively fall into the sort of order that you want. And I don't really know of other games that do that. There's been comparisons that people have made to, like, Drax Operative, which I haven't played, but Keith has. And, you know, I think that because it's a procedural space game, you know, with a big simulation and so forth, there's some similarities. But I think that's more combat-focused is my understanding. And I think that they're also more, way more hands-off in terms of, you know, your interaction with the simulation. And I get the feeling their simulation isn't as robust, and that instead their combat is more robust. It just, you know, differences in focus, you know. But we didn't want to be like them. I mean, you know, it would, you know, they've already done that. They've mastered that. I don't want to step on their toes. We want to do our own thing anyway, you know. So it's I'm always happy to be different from every other game. But yeah, so I mean, that's I think that's kind of where it really stands out as being unique, is just that there's no one way to win, and that doesn't mean there's five ways to win. That means there's just in ways to go about this. And that is a lot like Dwarf Fortress for me, which I just love Dwarf Fortress and how it just is this crazy story generator.
Mm-hmm.
And Boat Murdered is one of my favorite things on the internet, which is, you know, one of the famous Let's Plays for Dwarf Fortress. And anybody who's listening who hasn't read Boat Murdered, look it up on the LP archive. It is absolutely worth your time. It is hilarious. You don't have to know anything about Dwarf Fortress. It starts out a little bit slow with the first couple of things, but then it's just absolutely hilarious as you get further and further into it. And, you know, I really wanted to create something that would create stories, mm-hmm. you know, remotely on that level. And I've wanted to do that for a long time. I'd hoped to do that with Valley 1, and that we made a lot of cool things with Valley 1, but that wasn't one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And with The Last Federation, you know, it makes a strategy game out of that, which Dwarf Fortress is more of a, it's not really a strategy game in the classic sense. It's more of a city builder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so.
And it's interesting that you mentioned Drock Softrift, because I was actually writing that in my review of The Last Federation. They are both similar, as you said, but having played Drock Softrift, it is more of an ARPG set on this 4X type design, as opposed to Last Federation, which definitely spends more time at the simulation or the 4X level of gameplay.
Yeah, and I, Total War, that series is something of an inspiration to me with how it balances. I mean, it has real-time combat and then turn-based, you know, grand strategy. We have real-time grand strategy, which is pausable, and then turn-based combat, so it's kind of the opposite. But the combats are discrete things. We've, in our beta branch right now, we are finishing up polish on an auto-resolve system so that you can skip the combat if you're just into the grand strategy stuff. They're both contemplative sort of things, not twitch things, so they both go hand-in-hand. But, you know, that being said, sometimes you just want to get on with the grand strategy parts of it, too, even if you really love the tactical bits. So anyway, that'll go into the main official branch of the code, hopefully tomorrow, because it's hitting that point of maturity. But Total War is kind of a similarity there. I mean, you know, Civilization, Total War, those sorts of things, Dwarf Fortress, SimCity. All of those were very much inspirations, for me. And, you know, AI War in some respects as well, kind of, you know, you've got matter and dark matter, it's kind of AI War and dark AI War, where it's kind of like the antithesis of AI War, where it's like things that are kind of like AI War, but that are the opposite. I don't know. There were just things that I wanted to do with AI War that could have fit into AI War if mm-hmm. I'd made certain different decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they cannot be part of AI War because of the nature of how it actually turned out,
mm-hmm.
Which is not a slam at all. It's just the nature of them being two very distinct games. And, you know, it's not the opposite of AI War. It's just... if they were puzzle pieces, they would fit together without overlapping.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, I know we're getting a bit late with the podcast, so I just have two more questions for you, and mm-hmm. then we will start wrapping things up. So, my first one, this is what we were sort of talking about before the cast began, is I was having some problems learning The Last Federation, and I figure it would be a good idea to talk about them on the cast, because that way, if there are people out there listening who are also having trouble, this may sort of help them out as well.
So, absolutely.
So my big concern, what I'm sort of having trouble understanding right now, is what I should generally be doing outside of gaining influence. Like, I'll give you an example. In the game that I'm playing right now, I've gotten the top race on the Tech Advisor. I've gotten them to 100 influence. I got two others at 40 and 30 respectively. And I'm sort of just sitting there spinning my wheels going, okay, I got all this influence, but now what am I supposed to do? Do I just let the clock tick away until the Federation unlocks? Should I be going to everyone trying to do quests for them? Should I be giving everyone spacefaring tech? Just generally, like, what is the next step outside of trying to get enough influence with the popular races?
Well, there's a couple of different things that are kind of competing for your attention.
Mm-hmm.
One of which is progress towards the Federation, you know, which can involve influence. But it doesn't have to, because some races can backdoor others into the Federation. And so race A is already in the Federation, let's say the Skylaxians, and you have high influence with them, and they have a really good working relationship with somebody that hates your guts. Mm-hmm. And you've been, you know, there's always an opportunity cost to everything. So you've taken the opportunity to endear yourself to people that you can't necessarily backdoor yourself into. And then all the crap that you can dump on anybody, you've dumped on the people that already hate you anyway, mm-hmm. and that you're going to use the Skylaxians to backdoor in. Mm-hmm. And so making sure that the Skylaxians and the other race have a very high attitude towards one another can become another goal. But that's something that once you start getting the Federation options, then that's really something you start focusing mm-hmm. on. So at any rate, that's one thing, and I'll come back to that in a second, but that's one thing that's competing for your attention. The other thing is personal power. And so as certain races get techs, or as you get techs, there are some of those that give you direct combat bonuses mm-hmm. to your ship. And then there's also occasional things that'll pop up that'll let you go unlock new special abilities. And so those things are always a good thing to pursue as well, because otherwise the actual tactical battles get progressively harder for mm-hmm. no real reason except for the fact that you're not keeping up with the Joneses, you know. Mm-hmm. The other thing to look at is kind of the tech tree. Or actually, really, the racial power grid is the easier way to look at it, where you can see it's this grid, you know, where it's got all of the different races on one axis, and it's got, like, space power, ground power, science power, mm-hmm. manufacturing, blah, 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 along the other axis. You can see who's good and bad at what at the particular moment. And if there's somebody that's really not your friend, that's really powerful in a certain way, like space power or ground power or whatever, then you may go, okay, those guys, I either want to go harm, like you could go attack their fleets. It's going to piss them off, mm-hmm. but it'll also potentially endear you to people that already dislike them. And not only will you then gain some credit from that, which you then go spend somewhere, but it also, you know, weakens their number of armadas and so forth, which is a great use of your time. Or you could go, these guys are preparing for a ground invasion. I need to, you know, really help the races that... I may have high influence with a race, but if they're falling behind in kind of the power struggle that's going on, it doesn't matter how much they like me if they die, mm-hmm. you know. And so you go, well, okay, they need some more spacefaring or space technology that will that maybe nobody has yet, but that I can research with them on a dispatch mission that we both then get it. So I've gained personal power, they've gained space power. And they're now a little more even with the other race. Or you might help them with building armadas for a while or something like that. So, in other words, to break that down, the high-level bit of it is you either focus on endearing yourself to people that can help form the Federation, endearing people that can help backdoor other people into the Federation with each other. That's a complicated one. You can help attack the people that you're worried are going to kind of take over. You don't necessarily need to kill them, but if you're worried that somebody who's really hostile is going to start killing the people that you care about, then either you probably want to help your people kill them, or at least just suppress them, you know, one way or the other. Or you go more on the defensive end of things and help, you know, shore up the defenses of the people that you do care about, because you have high influence with them, you've invested time in making them like you and yada yada, now make them strong, mm-hmm. you know. And then, of course, the last one being, you know, also making yourself strong so that you're not getting outclassed in the battles and thus getting kind of impotent in terms of ability to, you know, gain credit or actually, you know, affect certain technologies. Because if you're no longer, like, effective as Batman, mm-hmm. then your ability to influence things really kind of plummets. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the general things, and it really just requires looking at basically three screens, one being the racial power grid, mm-hmm. where you can go, is there anybody who's really a problem here, or where in these numbers, you know, are there numbers that are too high where I don't want them, or too low where I do, you know, don't want them to be too low? Mm-hmm. And then the relationship screen is really useful, too, to see who hates who or who really likes who. And then the Federation status screen gives you all the different options about, you know, how a race might get into the Federation. And so that shows you kind of opportunities of, you know, I can afford to have these guys hate me because I can get these other guys that they mutually like to get them in anyway. And it's really key that I make these guys like me and get into the Federation early, because X, Y, and Z down the line will happen. And then the last thing being the computer advisor to make sure that you're not falling behind on something in particular, and that if there's some particular threat, that it's warning you of that and going, yeah, you know, those guys you like, they've got teeth worms and you may want to help, you know, vaccinate. So, I mean, you know, those are the kind of the general broad categories of what you're doing the whole game. And, you know, now that I've explained that, I probably need to make the game do a better job of explaining that as well.
Well, I think that's one of the interesting things about The Last Federation is that it's not a traditional strategy game in the sense that you always know what your beginning, mid, and end game is going to be. It's more, as you said, it's more like Dwarf Fortress, where it's more about reacting to these events that are out of control or trying to influence specific events in your favor.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things that you can very directly control, much more so than, say, like our game Skyward Collapse. And Dwarf Fortress has a lot of direct control as well, but then it's just like none of your plans really survive contact with the enemy indefinitely, you know? And, you know, some of your plans will work. Some of them work for a while. Some of them crash and burn on the runway. And then it's kind of dealing with how that goes. And I would honestly say that that's really true of, like, playing an RTS game against an actual human opponent, too. Of, like, you try some stuff and it works for a while and then you have to change. Or you try some stuff and it works great. Or you try some stuff and it's just they roll you, whatever. But the number of options that you have of things to try and ways in which things can go sideways on you is just so much smaller in a game like that versus here it's just hundreds of things that could happen. And that can get a little bit overwhelming, but the really key data gets boiled down onto just a few screens. And then you can, of course, drill into all the, you know, where's and why's and how could I, you know, affect these things, which, you know, gets more detailed. But it's kind of like SimCity. I mean, that's bloody complicated, but you can kind of, you know, you get the RCI bar, which is really important, and you've got, like, you know, does this have power and water? That's important, you know, and the general placement of some stuff, that's important. If, you know, and crime and power coverage, roads, if you have those kind of basic things covered, then you're like, I have things kind of under control, but then there's this other stuff that's happening, and you have to really drill in more with that, you know. But then there's, you know, there's kind of the surface layer and then the under layer, you know. And the surface layer is reasonably simple overall, but the detail layer just goes.
Yeah. And another question I had regarding this, you mentioned you can keep the game paused. A lot of it's based on the solar months. So should a new player keep the game or keep game time running constantly, or should it just be kept forever paused other than to, like, fast forward? Like, let's say you're doing a research project for 50 months, and you need to, you know, super fast forward through those times.
Generally speaking, you're going to want to be paused pretty much most of the time. The exceptions would be if something is, let's say, about to happen or in the process of happening. Maybe there's a war on, let's say. And you're kind of watching that to see what all is going to happen with it. You don't necessarily want to get involved quite yet. You also don't want to get involved in some major other project just yet. But, you know, honestly, if you're just kind of watching stuff, you'll notice there's no fast forward or super fast forward just on the main map. And the reason there's not is because if there was, then people would use it. And there's all these dispatch missions that you can do for races, and those have the fast forward and super fast forward buttons. But while you're fast forwarding or super fast forwarding, you're accomplishing something else. You're earning credits, you're earning influence, you're helping a race do this or that, or harming a race doing this or that. So you're accomplishing two different things. And so if you just want to kind of have time pass and kind of see what develops, like let's say with the war, then really the best thing to do is to start a dispatch with somebody that's accomplishing something at least moderately useful. It doesn't have to be part of some grand master plan. It just has to be something that's like, this is useful. This is a good way to spend my time. I'm gaining credit. I'm getting influence with somebody I like. They're getting something out of it. This is not like a masterstroke move, but it's a good way to like pass the time while I keep an eye on this war via fast forwarding, you know? And so you then, you know, fast forward and, you know, 5 seconds later, you kind of, you know, stop and look at it. And you're like, yeah, the war's still going right. Fast forward 5 seconds later, you're like, all right, I'm going to stop doing what I'm doing. I'm going to go over there. I'm going to fight, you know? And so there's not a whole lot of time that you would be spending not paused when you're not in a dispatch. If you're playing the game really seriously, if you're just kind of wanting to sit and look and get a sense of how things are moving around and watch things moving past, if you're playing on like the normal difficulty levels, and certainly at the early part of the game, there is absolutely no harm. If you want to sit there for 5 minutes watching the ships fly by and just kind of looking at things happening in real time, that is not going to break your game. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, God, he's unpaused for 5 minutes and didn't do anything. He's lost. Mm-hmm. You know, on a harder difficulty, that might have been kind of a, you know, it's not the best thing to do. But, you know, it's not a desperate time race either, you know. So,
okay. And one last tutorial-based question then, and then we'll move on. I saw what you talked about, the RCI stats that unlocked after a few minutes of play. And the only thing I was wondering is, what should I be, like, focusing on with them? Now, in the game, of course, it says that if it gets really high or really low, certain events will happen. But where I'm looking at it from the first time, I'm just left wondering, okay, I see that this guy's medical is negative 20 now. What does that mean to me? Or this guy's economy is trending up now. Should I be lowering it? Should I leave it alone? Or generally, what should the RCI factors influence my decisions?
Yeah, that is a very complicated question. And that is one thing in particular that I have struggled with trying to explain. The tooltips, you probably haven't noticed it because it's been in a recent update. The tooltips now explain what the benefits or penalties of each RCI factor are in terms of like ship construction speed or, you know, birth and death rates or, you know, whatever. So you can look at that and say, okay, well, this is negative on medical, so the, you know, birth and death rates are less favorable here, so the population growth is not going to be as good on this particular planet. Oh, and diseases are more likely to outbreak. Alrighty. Well, how does that influence what you want to do? Well, that kind of depends. Do you like that race? Do you care if they get a disease? You know, do you, you know, are they a powerful race? So I mentioned before, like, maybe there's this race that's gearing up for a ground war. And you're like, geez, you're getting all these soldiers. This is terrible. You know, one of the things you could do is take some sort of various action. There's some ones that you can take as dispatches. There's some political things you could do, like dumping toxic waste or doing various other things that would worsen their medical rating. And so you could focus on that for a little while. And suddenly, all those ground troops are less effective. And maybe you luck out and a disease outbreaks too and starts just, you know, that's the end of that kind of gearing up for war effort for a while, because these guys are dealing with the, you know, quarantines and trying to get a vaccine, and you're not helping them get a vaccine, and, you know, all this stuff. And you're like, woohoo, they're distracted for a while. Now I can go do something else, you know. So that would be one non-military way to kind of thwart a military, possibly permanently, possibly for a while, or it may not work, you know. Mm-hmm. They may be too resistant to that. They may take some actions like swords to needles where they, you know, reassign some of their soldiers to be doctors instead, and then are like, oh no, we're going to get the medical back up. Although that kind of served your purpose too, because now they, you know, they retrained some of their soldiers to be doctors. So, you know, so there's things like that. And then a lot of the rest of it, you can kind of ignore. unless it gets into realms where you want to exploit something or you're worried that it's going to negatively impact somebody that you like. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that is something that is like a big thing with AI war as well, where there's a lot of data and it's all important. There's nothing that's not important, but it may not be important right now. If the numbers are kind of neutral, you know, 20 or something, you know, one way or the other, negative, positive 20 on the RCI scales for economy or whatever, those are, you know, moderate. There's nothing, they're not real special one way or the other, you know, and the rise in it, I mean, it's going up, but, you know, it'll take it a while. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not some sort of, this isn't, you know, those time management games where you have to do, like, everything at once, but you can't because you're, you know, like the restaurant simulators and stuff. Mm-hmm. This is not one of those, you know. There's a bunch of stuff that's happening, and you can look at it and go, yeah, that's fine, whatever. I don't care about that right now. You know, it's, you know, there's a war on in there. Or, you know, these guys are in internal war. Those guys have a disease. These guys, their public order is going down, and, you know, so crime's going up, whatever. Mm-hmm. They are not part of my plan at the moment. I'll deal with mm-hmm. them when, you know, because there's only so much you can do. Mm-hmm. They're going to, you know, the simulation is going to continue with those guys. You are not going to be able to manage all eight races to perfection, certainly not all at one time. So you kind of have to pick who you want to help, who you want to make sure doesn't overwhelm everything, and make sure and help and hinder those people. And that includes looking at the RCI values for them specifically and the other various factors that are important, you know, like their military levels, science levels, all that sort of stuff. And then for everybody else, it's kind of like, you guys are on hold. Once I have these things taken care of, I'll see where you are. If you're in real bad straits, then I'll maybe kill you or maybe help you. If you're in real good straits, then I'm going to try and help you and get you on in here, unless you're really mean, in which case I'm going to try and kill you. you know, and you just kind of go from there, because it's just kind of like you have to focus in on specifically, you know, if you try and just run all over the place, you're going to wind up accomplishing nothing. But if you try and just focus on a race or two at a time, while making sure that everything else doesn't just explode, then, you know, then you're fine. And really, the RCI values don't change rapidly enough that, barring, like, disaster, like, if there's a typhoon or something, then suddenly something is much, much worse. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, maybe since there happened to be a typhoon, I should do something here. After all, they weren't part of my plan, but now there's, like, typhoon relief I have to deal with here because I think I'm going to like them later. So, okay, I'm going to put my normal plans on hold for just a bit. Typhoon relief, now back to our regularly scheduled programming, you know. Mm. So, I mean, that's a complicated question because it really, you know, it depends.
Depends on the moment at hand, basically.
Yeah, and it's not something that just flops around willy-nilly. The normal trends are slow. There's only a certain number of events at any particular time in the solar system. And, you know, it's meant to be a kind of contemplative game where you're not playing ponderously, but you're also not running around with your hair on fire, you know, and where you can afford to have some missteps, you know, where not every plan that you try is going to work, and that has to be okay, both with, you know, you not losing the game because of one plan not working, and also, you know, with you as the player going, you know, that didn't work, okay, you know, mm-hmm. let's try again, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's how it is, like I said, in an RTS game. Sometimes you try and attack the guy with, you know, towers or whatever, you know, line of towers up to him, and that totally doesn't work. So it's like, well, maybe let's build some archers, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's just on a little bit different time scale here, and using more than just like, well, let's switch military units, you know.
Awesome. All right. I know we are definitely running late on this cast, so I got one more question for you, and then we will start wrapping things up, and that is regarding the future of The Last Federation. as you mentioned, at way back at the start of this cast, or probably earlier in, The Laceration, of course, has been a big success for Arkane, and you're hoping to continue it. Now, you already talked about, or at least news pieces from Arkane has mentioned that The Laceration is going to be at least up there at least once a week with new content in some form for at least a few weeks, right?
For at least a few months, yeah. Okay. Right now, last week and then this week, we're adding new content almost literally daily. We're saying that we're doing it daily. Sometimes we've had a big dump of stuff after a couple of days gap, and so we do like 2 days worth of stuff, you know, after a couple of days gap, because, you know, it was something that required more testing and development on our purpose, on our side. But in general, it's been actually daily. And so the support has been just that high for it. And we're just, you know, really blown away. And so while the support is there, we're continuing to, you know, try and support it as well as we can back, you know, in return. One of the mistakes we did make with A Valley Without Wind 1 was we went with just a million pieces of free updates, and we didn't do any paid content. And with AI War, it was a much better situation where we did loads and loads of free content. If you bought the base game, you get bunches of stuff. That's still true now. You still get new stuff 5 years later. But then also we did, you know, paid expansions that were a, you know, really good value and had a bunch of new stuff and all that. So with the level of enthusiasm right now that we're seeing for The Last Federation, that's already the model that we're going for here. So we're expecting, knock on wood, to launch an expansion for the game in probably June, actually. And there's also just miles and miles and miles of free content and updates that we're doing. So, you know, we're just doing kind of both. But one of the ways that we're kind of a little bit kind of hedging in some ways, you know, so we can afford to definitely do all of this free update stuff for people without shooting ourselves in the foot is, you know, let's build some paid content alongside that. For the people who want more, there's more. And, you know, for those who just want the, you know, the I don't base. Want to say vanilla, the base experience, they've gotten more anyway during that time. So it should be win for everybody. And we will, you know, assuming that things continue, we'll probably do another expansion for this game late this year. We're also working on another expansion for AI War. We have not abandoned that game. You know, we're not going to, just because this one is such a success. And I don't believe that the two games, you know, wouldn't cannibalize us the other. They're both so different, even though they're both space strategy games. And
Are you still working on an expansion to Bionic Goose?
No, probably. I don't know. There's some stuff that we've done that we haven't released yet for it, and Keith in particular really wants to just get that out in some fashion. We may just wind up giving that out for free, I don't know, or we may wrap that into an expansion that includes some more content with it. I'm really not sure at the moment, and right now there's such a clamor for Last Federation stuff. I mean, our forums are just exploding, and so are the Steam ones and so forth. So, I mean, we're just, you know, it's awesome. It's a wonderful problem to have. But I mean, we haven't had this much just activity since like Valley 1 and AI War are currently the only two titles that have ever outsold this one. And this one is sold faster than anything we've ever done. Mm-hmm. And so it's you know, it's really sucking up a lot of our time. And like I said, we made some mistakes with Valley 1. Mm-hmm. With letting that happen and then support tapered off and stuff. But here we're kind of hedging, and support isn't showing signs of tapering either, which is really gratifying. And with stuff like Bionic and other projects as well, a lot of that's really going to kind of depend on what happens with TLF. I mean, if it keeps selling like it is now, you know, we kind of owe it to the players to just keep building. And honestly, there's so many ideas that I have, and I'm just so excited to be able to work in a world that's this robust. Because there's really, like with Bionic, it's a much smaller game, and I really love it. but it's really a struggle to come up with new content. Mm-hmm. Versus it's just like we have just pages and pages and pages of new content of stuff for the Last Federation and just, you know, new ideas all the time. And it's just so easy to come up with new stuff. I mean, I added like 15 new technologies this week, I think, and they hadn't occurred to me until like the day that I added them. And I'm like, oh, this is like perfect. This, mm-hmm. you know, will really add some cool stuff, you know. And it's just, you know, that wasn't even on my crazy long list of stuff I already wanted to do. So it's just like, you know, so it's a really exciting project for me, and I don't want to let that overshadow everything else. So we're definitely trying to, in particular with AI War, really maintain, you know, momentum there too. But in terms of other projects like expansion for Bionic or, you know, the other projects we have planned for the rest of this year, the timing and scheduling of that sort of thing and what exactly we do and when exactly we do it is just really so dependent on kind of the future with the Last Federation, because these sort of opportunities just really don't come our way this often. We've just had so many rough games in terms of reception versus the size of our studio. You know, the reception's been really good, but it's just been, in the, you know, for most indie titles, it's sold really well too. But it's one of those things where when you have a staff of 7, it takes a lot of, you know, money to keep that many people employed. And we had to shrink down to a staff of 4, unfortunately, a couple of months ago. And that's a lot more sustainable for us. But still, to not be, you know, scrabbling month to month for, you know, where's the money going to come from? Where's the money going to come from? Is a nice change of pace. I kind of like to keep it that way. So we're just kind of adapting to this strange new world.
And with the Laceration, besides the general idea of new content, as in, you know, new ships, new tech, can you talk, or have you thought about like long term additions? Like, do you have any ideas for like new systems or mechanics at the Laceration, or is that stuff still, you know, way too much in the ether at the moment?
Oh yeah, we've got loads of that sort of thing too. Let me pull up my document here. One of the things we talked about was having potentially progression of player power throughout a battle, so that you get a progression within a tactical battle, which would be pretty interesting. At some point, I have a desire to potentially do some literal, you know, this kind of older, like mud-like text adventure type stuff. Mm-hmm. I would kind of like to do some stuff kind of like that with dialogue trees, with dealing with some of the races, and I'd like to introduce more individual alien relationships, like not just with the race, but with a specific individual that you really like come to know as an individual, if possible at some point. I've had some the combat model that we have is something that could be adapted to also involve like commandos in ground combat, or even like commandos in shipboarding combat. And that's something that we've thought about doing at some point. Introducing cities on planets and having the cities with various interactions and various other stuff there is something that we've thought about doing in various ways. Doing a bunch more quests is something, of course. There's a bunch of special abilities and whatnot. There's been an interesting idea from players about introducing a galactic banking system, which is a really neat... It's too advanced for the base game in terms of just... That's not the sort of thing you want to throw at a player that's not the sort that's going to buy an expansion. You know what I mean? Because it's kind of like, whoa, that's a little bridge too far. Unless you're, you know, definitely into that sort of thing. But anyway, so those are some examples of just some of the things that, you know, just off of my quick list that we've been thinking about. And there's no guarantees that we're going to do any of those specific things or in any specific sort of way. But those are some of the big systems that we've been batting around design ideas about and thinking about and hoping to, I mean, you know, we could do, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot.
We should, like, we could do like 12 expansions with the amount of stuff that we have on our kind of maybe list at this point. And there's like new stuff being added all the time. So it's as giant as AI War is. And we've, you know, it's coming up on its sixth expansion in, you know, 5 years. You know, the Last Federation is just kind of, it's like SimCity or Dwarf Fortress. I mean, Dwarf Fortress is still being added to, and you know, after all these years, and it's just,
it's really become like a passion project.
Yeah, there's just no end to the depth you could put into Dwarf Fortress or Minecraft if you have the mix of passion and financial support to do so. You know, there's no reason, there's no like point where it's like, oh, you know, the engine doesn't let us do this because you know it's also open ended with the sim games in general, that sort of thing. And so, you know, we'll see. I mean, right now the financial support is there and the passion's definitely there. And so as long as all the ducks stay lined up in a row, I mean, I really hope for this to be a very, very long-term thing. Like AI War, or even more so.
Cool. And I have one question that I forgot to ask you when we were talking about the lore of the game that if I don't ask this, I'm going to be screaming at myself for the rest of the night. With the lore of the species, obviously, how each species relates to specific diplomacy or specific gameplay design, when you were coming up with the gameplay and the lore of The Last Federation, did you think up the races first and then put the gameplay to them? Or did you think of generally the different diplomacy models first and then how do I, you know, create a race that would fit that specific mold?
Kind of, we met in the middle. Okay. For Starport 28, we had designed 20 different races with different personalities and characteristics and so forth. And the 8 that are in The Last Federation were the 8 that I thought were most interesting out of the Starport 28 design. And so we'd picked out those 8, and they already had all their characteristics and so forth. But then it was kind of like, all right, well, you know, what kind of, we know what their personality is like. What sort of forms of government might fit with those? And with some of them, it was really obvious. It's like, okay, with the Klingon-like guys, warlords. Cool. All right, you know, we'll figure out how that works, but, you know, warlords. You know, with the, you know, Thraxians that are like a hive mind, hive queens, you know, okay, that's obvious too. The guys that are, you know, little green men sort of guys, the Skylaxians, Senate, great, you know. And so then it was just kind of like, okay, well, what kinds of government are there, you know? So we started like looking up stuff, you know, okay, communism, you know, all right, well, you know, well, parliament, that's pretty similar to a Senate though. So we're like, well, how can we make those work suitably differently? And we're like, okay, well, we'll make the parliament a party-based system, which makes sense, and then we'll make the Senate system where everybody votes for conscience. So there's no parties. It's not a party system, and it's all a seat-based system. And, you know, that plus the very distinct differences in the personality of the races made for that. So, I mean, you have the kind of mechanics, and then we say, okay, so we've got that stuff. Then what sort of political deals are even going to be available with any particular race? So it's like, all right, now we've got the personality, if they're general type of political system, I know these guys are warlords, what kind of deals would the warlords let us do, you know, and how would we do deals with them? And it's like, okay, well, we have the prime warlord and the secondary warlords, and you can bribe, you can leverage, you can get the secondaries to put in words with their bosses, and you can fight the bosses and kill them and get a secondary to come up, but you get leverage, you know, that whole thing, right? You just go down that whole path. And that was one of the more complicated ones to design because it was so unusual. The Skylaxian Senate was the first one that we did, and then, you know, we kept going from there. But, you know, we're like, okay, well, you know, these political deals will only be for this particular race, or everybody except these guys have this particular option because this doesn't fit with their personality. And so, are we okay with them just not having an option in this area, or should we give them some sort of other complementary option? And depending on the case, we would either say, nope, they just don't have anything in that area. Or we'd say, you know, we'll do something else that's more appropriate to their, you know, character, but that gives the same general idea. And, you know, so a lot of asymmetry came out through that process. So the general idea is that it was pretty much lore and then figuring out political systems to match the lore and trying to be as unique as possible with the political systems, and then trying to translate those political systems into actual game mechanics and the personality in the game mechanics. And that actually turned out to be the best way to do it for our purposes, I think, because the game mechanics would not have been so diverse. I wouldn't have thought of stuff like that if I wasn't trying to figure out how to make, you know, communist barn owls that have a chip on their shoulder, but are really weak, but like bombing stuff. You know, there's so many mechanics that we wouldn't have come up with that are related to those characteristics of that race, you know? And all the races have different characteristics along those lines, and so, you know, we wouldn't have burlesque duels or anything if it wasn't for the leverage system and some of the other stuff there. You know, so it was a very good source of inspiration. We found that with Skyward Collapse as well, where Josh Knapp, he went and looked for all these pieces of mythology and then was like, okay, these are the sort of tokens or whatever we might have. You know, here's a bunch of artifacts, and here they're associated with different races and different gods and this sort of thing. Wonder what sort of gameplay these might have. And they were like, okay, and we just went through and boom, 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 here's gameplay. And it was stuff that we wouldn't have thought up had it not been like, oh, so these are these boots, and they're, you know, they let them fly, and they do whatever. So, what might a game mechanic for that be? Oh, hey, this is cool. You know, and so we came up with all of this, you know, game mechanic content, like for Skyward Collapse, just from the historical inspirations on things. It's analogous, I guess, to what we did with The Last Federation.
Awesome. All right. I think with that, we could probably talk for like another few hours. But yeah, we've definitely gotten a lot accomplished tonight.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I think with that, we can finally start wrapping things up. We've been going now for just about 3 hours. I think we've talked about just about everything we could possibly do tonight. And I probably could talk for another few hours if we wanted to, but we're both East Coast, and I think it's getting a bit late here.
Yeah, about midnight.
Yeah. So, Chris, again, it was a pleasure talking to you tonight. It was great hearing your insights on Nintendo as well as how The Last Federation has turned out. I still haven't put my review up yet because I'm still trying to learn the game and try to get a game all the way through to its end before I start writing something up. But yeah, I'm definitely interested to see how you guys will take it in the next few months.
Sounds good. Well, we're making new updates all the time, so.
Awesome. With that said, we're going to end things for the Perceptive Podcast this week. As always, if you're interested in contributing to Game Wisdom, either by writing a piece or by appearing on a future podcast, you can send me an email under Submissions Wanted on the front page. That will take you to the guidelines as well as my email address. So, with that said, have a great weekend, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care, everybody.